This is the Midday 180.
Delivered by Edley's Barbecue.
With Jonathan Hutton, Chad Withrow, and Paul Kuharski. On 104.5 The Zone.
Just like that, the final hour is here. Midday 180, delivered by Edley's Barbecue. With Chad Withrow, I'm Jonathan Hutton. PK stepped away briefly. He is on a conference call with a Titans assistant coach, so he'll rejoin the show momentarily. A lot to discuss across the National Football League. Coaches out, job openings galore, as is the case this time of year, and as is also the case in January. It's playoff time. A lot to talk about today with John McClain of the Houston Chronicle, who joins us weekly right here on 104.5 The Zone. You can join him as well. 615-737-1045, 737-1045. As we say hello to the man they call the General in Houston, here in Nashville. On this show, we call him the Man in Black. He did a wonderful job for local TV post-game. I got back to the hotel room after the game on Sunday, John, and turned on the TV, and there is John McClain staring back at me, giving his grades for the season. And spoiler alert, they were not good for the Houston Texans. John, great to see you. Hope you're doing well.
So you were the one watching on Sunday night. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
I was wondering who that was.
John, apparently they opened the show, Hutton said yesterday, by teasing your segment with the grades, that they were already ready for that segment right when they opened the show. That's how highly anticipated your segment is on that TV show.
No, that's because I did it earlier, and they had a chance. Were able to plan it, and so they kicked off with it because everything else was done after the game. And I'm writing my grades for the Chronicle tomorrow, and I'm looking here. I got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 Fs, and a D plus for the coaching.
And the joke that you mentioned on the show, John, was it was very similar to your grades at Baylor, which I had a good laugh at.
I thought I said that about Paul at Columbia.
That too. Coming up, John's going to rank for us the job openings across the NFL for potential coaches from worst to first. So we'll get into that. Again, we welcome your phone calls. You can go to the front of the line for John McClain at 615-737-1045.
Yeah, this is your one chance to talk to the Man in Black, a Hall of Famer, John McClain. A big playoff weekend upcoming. Phone lines are open, 737-1045, 737-1045. John, I want to start with the text, and I want to spoil your segment talking about ranking these jobs, but just specifically, whoever the next coach is with the Texans, what are they inheriting outside of a great quarterback in Deshaun Watson?
Well, first of all, they played a first-place schedule, and the teams that beat them finished 57 games over 500, and five of them were in first place. So they played a really tough schedule. Next year would be a third-place schedule. They also had eight starters out on defense, so one reason A.J. Brown's able to beat Keon Crossins because he's a special teams player, having to play because of injuries. And then the safety that didn't give him the help, A.J. Moore is another guy that should be on special teams. So they need to get healthy, but the defense needs to be overhauled. They don't have the first two picks. They have eight picks beginning in third round. And right now, if the salary cap were $175 million, and I'm told it's going to be higher, because the national money is more than they anticipated. I don't know if it's $5 million or what, but right now they'd be projected over $15 million. There's a couple of players that can get rid of them, get underneath. They got Watson. They're loaded with wide receivers. Watson led the NFL in yards per attempt, despite losing Will Fuller, DeAndre Hopkins. He kept throwing the ball down the field. The Titans saw that in two games in which he threw seven touchdown passes. And their tight ends are good. They have offensive tackle. They need a running back. They need a right guard. And then they need defense to be overhauled. And they have an owner who has been very patient with head coaches. Last year, the Texans spent more money on players than any team in the league. And they got an owner in Cal McNair who he wants to know what's going on, but he doesn't tell them what to do, just like his dad, the late Bob McNair. He gives them a lot of rope, and if they hang themselves, he'll fire them.
John, your thoughts. So we've been asking all of our guests thoughts on Derrick Henry surpassing 2,000 yards and running for 250 on this Texans defense on Sunday to get there. Of the eight players who have rushed for 2,000, he's the only player that needed more than 200 yards in the final game of the regular season to reach that mark, and he did so. He went over 200 yards in the third quarter.
Well, boy, he made me look bad because I predicted he'd have 200 in the first half. And he was playing against a terrible run defense. And I thought the most astonishing thing is not 2,000 yards. You know, eight players have done that. The most astonishing thing is rushing for 200 yards three times against the same team, which had never been done in NFL history. That was the most impressive to me. And the fact that Derek is not even 27 and he plays in the AFC South, he's had five 200-yard games, three against the Texans, two against the Jaguars, and he's going to play them twice a year. And if he has one more, and he may have two or three next year in the AFC South, he's going to surpass O.J. Simpson and Adrian Peterson, who have the most in history. These kinds of numbers are going to get Derrick Henry in the Pro Football Hall of Fame. I am voting. I'm writing a column for Thursday about my postseason awards. Aaron Rodgers is MVP. Derrick Henry's Offensive Player of the Year.
That's high praise. Especially for a player on the Titans roster. But not too long ago, we were discussing, you know, when's the last time, you know, we've watched a player at Nissan Stadium that was on the home sideline where you thought this guy's got a shot at making a case down the road for Pro Football Hall of Fame status. As a selector, when you're sitting there watching these players across the league, John, and I've asked Paul this too, what's it like watching the likes of, you know, Aaron Donald, and other players in their prime, knowing that down the line you're going to be selecting them for a gold jacket?
Well, I've got one right here, J.J. Watt, who I think is a first ballot lock based on what he's done in his career. And Aaron Donald's another lock. And I think Derrick Henry, the thing about Derrick, he didn't get used up early in his career. You know, he's kind of a late bloomer. And the way he's so durable, despite all the punishment he absorbs, you know, he can do this for another 3 or 4 years. And when I watch him run and the speed and how nobody catches him from behind, it reminds me of Earl Campbell. Couldn't run an impressive 40, but people don't catch him from behind, the way he bounces outside. I know Arthur Smith likes to pull him in some passing situations, and I guarantee you every defense is going, whew. We don't have to worry about this guy getting a draw, a screen pass. Remember that pass he took 52 yards against the Texans in overtime to put up his touchdown run to win? So it's good that they give him some breathers, but I think we're looking at a Hall of Fame running back because he's doing things that only a very select few have done, or in that case, a three consecutive 200-yard games. Nobody's done, and I'm already, when the schedule comes out, I'm going to say, okay, Derrick Henry is going to be the first player in NFL history to rush for four consecutive 100-yard games against the same team.
We'll get to Dallas's call first when we come back, but some phone lines are open for your NFL questions in what's going to be a big wild card weekend for John McClain from the Houston Chronicle. 615-737-1045, 737-1045.
Much more coming on the NFL with John McClain next on the Midday 180, delivered by Edley's Barbecue, 1045 The Zone. Midday 180 delivered by Edley's Barbecue. John McClain with us. You can join him, 615-737-1045, our number. John, with the report in Houston, with the news that the Texans have interviewed Nick Caserio, who they wanted to hire, John, whenever Brian Gaine was fired a couple of years ago. The Patriots did not allow that to happen.
Caserio's in town interviewing today. They did a Zoom interview with Joe Brady, the offensive coordinator of the Panthers. He's on a lot of lists. But Joe Brady didn't do anything special this year. He's 31 years old. He didn't turn Teddy Bridgewater's career around. Bridgewater threw for a lot of yards because they didn't have McCaffrey, and they were behind most of the time. But he's one of them. They want to interview Arthur Smith when the Titans are done, Matt Eberflus when the Colts are done. I'm still waiting on him to to ask for permission to interview 49ers defensive coordinator Robert Saleh and Eric Bieniemy of the Chiefs, because Saleh is one that I know him because he was here for 6 years, and I'd love to see him come back. I think Arthur Smith's got multiple opportunities. He's doing just a fantastic job. So Texans have interviewed GM candidates as well as coaching candidates, and when they get their GM, and I'm guessing that's probably going to be Nick Caserio, that then he will hire the head coach. Boy, I hope it's not Josh McDaniels. And if it's a former Patriot coach, maybe it will be Brian Daboll, who was there for years and is the offensive coordinator at Buffalo, who has done a tremendous job with Josh Allen and the Bills offense.
You mentioned Arthur Smith there, that they want to talk with him. And every candidate, I'm sure they'll take in a serious manner. But do you view Arthur Smith as a head coach in the league next season somewhere?
I sure do. The problem is there's no somebody. Some people predicted 8 to 10 openings. How many are there? 5. Am I missing somebody here?
I think there's 6.
6, I think, with the Chargers.
I got the Chargers, Jets, Jaguars, Falcons, Texans. Who am I missing?
Lions.
Lions. They're easy to miss. And I think based on what Arthur Smith has done with that offense, especially with Ryan Tannehill, and they're creative too. I go back to that playoff game when the Wildcat passed from Henry to Corey Davis. And so, yes, I think Arthur Smith has been there 10 years through 4 head coaches. This is his time to strike. Now, maybe he gets offered a job with a franchise where he doesn't want to go because they have bad ownership or they have a bad general manager. And so he stays and waits for a better offer.
Coming up, we will have John rank the openings across the league of those 6 openings. Chances are
Detroit's going
to
be.
Yeah, he may start with Dallas if we're going worst to first. We go to Dallas to start here up on line one. Hey, Dallas, what's up, man?
How's it going, guys? I'd like to wish John McClain a happy new year and you guys the Midday 180.
Thank you, Dallas.
First of all,
happy new year.
Now, Derrick Henry surpassed the 2,000-yard mark this year, only being a primary first and second down back. Now, the other backs that's in that elite category, were they primarily first and second backs? McClain, you probably would know with all the knowledge and wisdom you got, and I'll hang up and listen.
Thank you very much, Dallas. Happy New Year to you. If you go back, Adrian Peterson was an every down back, O.J. Simpson, Tiki Barber, Jamal Lewis came out. And truthfully, if I've got a guy who's going to rush for 2,000 yards, I want him to have some breathers. You know, if it's 3rd and 5 or more, you know, and he's averaging 5 yards a carry, say more than 3rd and 5, then I take him out. One of the reasons that Derrick Henry has been so incredible this season is because Arthur Smith has done a great job of utilizing him. A lot of times that depends on what defense he's going against. Are they paying 8-man fronts? Are they physical? You know, are they dirty? And I think they've done a terrific job of managing him. And I don't think him as purely as a 2-down back, because if it's 3rd and 3, does he come out?
Often, yeah. But listen, the thing isn't about how much he's off the field. Dalvin Cook is an every down back. Dalvin Cook had 312 carries, and he's getting more receptions. Derrick Henry had 378 carries. So it doesn't matter how often he's off the field. Like you're saying, he's getting a breather on 3rd down. And you know, we all think it's somewhat of an issue that he's not on the field on some 3rd downs. But he had 378 carries. So when he's on the field, he's getting the ball an outrageous number of times. That's the key.
And it's amazing when he is on the field how that play action works with Tannehill. Just amazing. And I feel bad for defenses. I don't blame them for going after Henry and biting on the play fake and then Tannehill taking off around the corner like he's still a wide receiver at Texas A&M. But I feel sorry for defenses that have to go against the Titans offense.
I mean,
But I think, as you guys know this, if the Titans are going to have an undoing, it's going to be on their defense. Never. This game coming up, the 22 teams that run the ball, power running teams, it's the game of the weekend for me.
never mind to the callers, two down, three down. Just listen to the attempts. Derrick Henry, 378. Dalvin Cook, 312. Second. Josh Jacobs, 273. Third. Those are incredible gaps. Now, Cook missed a game, or missed two games. I guess one injured, one for a funeral. Josh Jacobs missed a game, but they're still second and third.
Phone lines are open, 615-737-1045, 737-1045. John, what'd you make of what happened in Philly? Is this a crime against the sport, or is this something that's been overblown?
My goodness, you would think that Doug Peterson had been out partying without a mask and no social distancing and affecting people with the coronavirus, the way he's getting blasted. I think he should get blasted. I don't buy it. I just can't imagine a head coach would do that on his own, knowing how he was going to be eviscerated. And he is being eviscerated. But who would tell him to do that? I mean, it's almost like, yeah, he improved his draft position a couple of spots. The player they draft in the first round turns out to be great. People are going to go, man, that Doug Peterson, remember when he used to be here? That was a smart thing to do. But it's a black eye in NFL and a black eye season.
Here's what I don't understand, John. Why not just start Sudfeld? If the intention was to lose, why even put forth the ruse of starting Jalen Hurts and looking like you're trying to win? Just do what every team does. Rest your starters. Rest the guys you want to rest if the intention was to lose. I don't know why they had to pull the plug in the fourth.
If Carson Wentz is starting, I'd say yes, but Hurts needs as much playing time as he can get, considering he's only played at the end of the year. But I can understand him playing him. Why didn't he just pull him at halftime and put Sudfeld in?
Sal Pal knows the heartbeat of that city as well as anybody, and he said on SVP that night, that game is going to have lasting ramifications fans of that team for a long time.
He went a step further.
They are angry.
Well, he went a step further. He went on Dan Patrick and said the league must launch an investigation into the Eagles.
Well,
and the decision behind that. He said it is paramount to the league and the integrity of it they launch an investigation.
They can do what they want. My stance is they're screwing with the television product. That is a big deal. You pick that Sunday night game, and NBC's paying a ton of money. You put that on, and the whole country's watching it, and all of a sudden, the Eagles just take the plug and pull it out of the socket.
The biggest problem is, don't lie about it.
Yes.
Doug Peterson treating everyone like they're idiots and saying, I was doing what was best to try to win. Doug Peterson should be honest and say, I'm not doing anything different that the Kansas City Chiefs and Andy Reid didn't
That's right. And it's
he
my
He did
prerogative.
What was best by for his team by not starting Mahomes. I did what was best for my team in the long run by putting Nate Sudfeld in the fourth quarter. Just admit it.
Hey, get this, John. You know what my son told me? My 11-year-old son, who is an alleged Eagles fan, he has Eagles stuff all over the place, but he doesn't pay any attention. It's his love affair with his mother from Philadelphia. But I got home from the game, and I said, hey, did you see what the Eagles did? And he said, oh, yeah, they let Washington get into the playoffs because their coach has cancer. And I said, where did you hear this? He said, yeah, my buddy Harper told me. I said, that's not what they did at all, buddy. And I sat him down, and I told him about what they did. He goes,
the heroic
yeah.
Eagles.
Yeah, that doesn't sound so good. But one 11-year-old was somehow conned into thinking. Yeah, conned into thinking that they let the cancer patient into the playoffs in some generous gift.
What a great,
I said him
what
straight
a great
immediately.
Narrative to put out
yeah,
there.
I said him straight immediately. That sounded like something a Sunday Night Football would have put forward if Collinsworth wasn't doing his job.
The Eagles are now the Make-A-Wish Foundation
yeah,
of the
right.
NFL.
I said him straight, lickety-split.
I got in a lot of trouble Monday, when I told my wife, a lifelong Washington fan, about her tainted division championship. Ooh,
she was happy. Mad. She'll take it. She loves Sudfeld.
John, if the Colts run the football the way they did last week, can they go on the road and win at Buffalo?
No, they're not going to beat Bills. Bills are averaging 38 points a game in their last five or six game winning streak. They've just been phenomenal on offense, and they're doing it with a great passing game and not a whole lot on the running game. But I don't think there's any way Indy's going in there and win that game.
We'll get more into these at the end of the week, but how about the Browns minus their head coach and with COVID issues at Pittsburgh in an immediate rematch?
That's amazing that had expecting teams, and maybe they're not going to be the only one. They've had issues now for the last 2 weeks, and they've had several times over the season. But I don't think even if Kevin Stefanski was coaching, they're going to go on the road and beat the Steelers. I think Pittsburgh is going to handle them. If they don't, it's certainly a changing of the guard, at least with Pittsburgh and Cleveland in the AFC North.
I don't know. I am America here. I am all in on the Browns. I want them to win that game desperately. I just think it's a tremendous story. I don't know if I'm...
It is a great story. So is Buffalo. First division title since 95. Both those teams are great stories at a time when we're looking for great stories.
John, we saw the openings yesterday across the league, some we already knew about, with the New York Jets, with Jacksonville, with the L.A. Chargers, Houston, Atlanta, Detroit. Let's rank these jobs worst to first. Is Detroit worst?
About head coach or general manager?
Yeah, for a head coach going to the current roster, the current makeup of ownership.
Cap.
Where would you want to be and why from worst to first?
Okay, I'm partial to the Texans because I just watched Deshaun Watson have an incredible season with no running game and an awful defense, and he was tremendous. 8-1 score losses with a first-place schedule, an owner who spent more money than any owner in the league last year, and he was paying three general managers at the same time. They stay out of it. They've had stability with their head coach. Gary Kubiak fired with three games left in his eighth season. Bill O'Brien fired four games into his seventh season. And so they spend a lot of money, and the owner stays out of it, and you got Deshaun Watson. What you don't have, a lot of cap money, and you don't have first two picks, but you got eight picks, and you're going to have some cap room, and these are five-year deals, not one-year deals. Second, I'd pick Atlanta for the same reason, stable ownership. Everybody else picks Jaguars first because they got the first pick overall. Trevor Lawrence has never thrown an NFL pass. I asked a co-host this morning on my Houston station, Lawrence or Watson, just the quarterback. One of them took Lawrence. And I'm like, guy's never thrown a pass. Anyway, they got all those picks. But the problem is they've had problems under Shad Khan as an owner. Coaches come and go. GMs come and go. Players bail on them. Go back to 2018, the season after they went to the AFC Championship game. This team should have been on top of the world. Players bailed. Who's to say this next group of players won't bail? So I'd put the Chargers fourth. They're always going to be number two in L.A. Nobody cares about them. They'll never have a sellout. They got Justin Herbert. They do have some talent. And then I would put Detroit next. It's between Detroit and Jets. Both of them have had so much instability, and they've been losing for a long time. And Woody Johnson's coming back to the Jets, and he was much more involved as an owner than his brother, Christopher Johnson. And in Detroit, Detroit's been a mess for so long, so I'd put Detroit in the Jets.
You think Stafford stays in Detroit?
I do. If you're a new coach there and you're not guaranteed having a quarterback, you know, he's got 2 years left on his contract. I want to start off with Matthew Stafford. And because he's a tough guy, he's durable. He's just not his fault that team's lost as much as it has. He's done a good job in the fourth quarter when games were within reach. In the fourth quarter, and coaches didn't blow them like Matt Patricia with bad decisions. So, yeah, I think Stafford stays there, and he should stay there.
Let's go to Eric on the phones. Eric, welcome.
Happy New Year, guys.
Same to you, Eric. Same to you, Eric.
Hey, guys. I got a trivia question for you, and then I've got a couple quarterbacks questions, but you answered one of them with Stafford. First of all, Derrick Henry is second in the NFL as far as playoff average rushing yardage with 126. Do you know who number one is?
In a playoff average rushing, it's Terrell Davis?
Yeah, you're right, John. It was Terrell Davis. And I found out he's averaging 122 yards rushing during the playoffs. That's just astounding. I saw that this morning on ESPN.
Got him in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah. Guys, my quarterback question is this. First of all, Marcus Mariota, do you think he's back with the Raiders next year? And you said, John, that Stafford's going to stay in Detroit, but what about these quarterbacks? Who do you think could most likely leave their team between Sam Darnold, Garoppolo, Matt Ryan, do you think any one of those three leave their organization? Do you think they stay? Guys, always good to talk to you. Take a good care. We'll talk to you again soon.
Thank you, Eric.
Thanks, Eric.
Happy New Year, Eric. And Mariota, I think, has a good chance to stay with the Raiders if they pay him. I think he's going to want the most money he can get, and they paid him well, but he wants to go somewhere, I'm sure.
I thought it's a two-year deal.
Yeah, I think he's under contract.
It's a two-year deal. Okay. Yeah. Never mind, Eric. What was the other question? I can't remember. Oh,
Sam Darnold.
The veteran quarterbacks who could be on the move.
Sam Darnold will be gone because the Jets will take a quarterback, and I would love to work with Sam Darnold if I was a quarterback coach and an offensive coordinator with some talent.
Sam Darnold.
Matt Ryan was the other name.
Yeah, Matt Ryan.
Matt Ryan's not going anywhere.
I think you take over with Matt Ryan, and then you can look towards the future. That's not a bad thing to inherit. Matt Ryan can still play some good quarterback. That franchise has just never recovered from that blown Super Bowl, and the next guy needs to reinvent it and clear the – not so much clear the decks as much clear the brain.
Yeah.
Wipe that off of the mind.
I'm guessing Rick Smith will be hired there as the general manager.
I like Rick a lot.
He's ready to come back. You know, he left because his wife, Tiffany, had cancer and she died. And he's got three kids to raise. He's had some interviews. He's tight with Rich McKay, the Falcons president, because they served on the competition committee for 8 years together. And he'll make a good impression on Arthur Blank. So I'm guessing he'll be hired there as GM. Jimmy Ray will be his assistant GM. And he'll go about worrying about that quarterback situation like he did here. And it wouldn't surprise me, Paul, if he didn't do what you suggested. Take a young guy, and it doesn't happen much anymore where they sit. But, you know, Aaron Rodgers sat, Phillip Rivers sat, didn't hurt them.
Yeah. I like the Chargers' job, John, more than you do. Because I think from a coaching perspective, being the second team in L.A. doesn't matter as much. Though if they want you to market, it is complicated. But the roster talent is not bad. You've got a young – you're inheriting a young quarterback. That's taken care of. Joey Bosa, Keenan Allen, Derwin James, who was out all year this year, Hunter Henry, Austin Eckler. There's a core of talent you're already inheriting there. Anthony Lynn's clock management was horrible. If you can manage the clock there, I think you're going into a decent situation that somehow doesn't get paid that much attention to. You're the little brother in a way that's – not a bad thing in terms of coaching a team that could quietly do some damage.
Yeah, if they don't care about those other things like no crowds, and they're used to that, traffic, taxes, your house burning down, things like that, that's a good job.
Herbert's numbers, I mean, there's your rookie of the year. 396 completions, that's the most ever for a rookie. 4,336 passing yards. That's the second most for a rookie. 31 passing touchdown is the most ever for a rookie. He had 5 rushing touchdowns, and he only threw 10 interceptions.
Did anybody see that coming?
No.
Did he go ahead of Tua?
They did since they drafted him. It's just Anthony Lynn didn't, because he kept insisting on Tyrod Taylor being his starter, and that doctor that stuck Taylor in the lung with a needle turned out to be their probably MVP.
You think Miami's going quarterback again? There's a lot of talk about them feeling
well,
like
if you watch, they see Tua like we know behind the scenes. They've got to be concerned about the way he's played after a hot start. But do they think that any of these other guys, and we got a long way to go, but do they think one of those other guys would be better than him? Based on what Chris Greer, the GM, and Brian Flores have done, maybe they would take one and eventually you could trade him if it doesn't work out, or if Tua does well next year. Like, what's going to happen to Jordan Love in Green Bay? Here, Rodgers had his best season. He says he wants to play into his 40s, and maybe Miami will draft a quarterback to motivate Tua the way Jordan Love seemed to motivate Aaron Rodgers.
A little bit different arm talent there.
Slight.
It's a lot different. I'd be very suspect of Alabama quarterbacks because of all the great talent they have. Like, I still don't know why Texas was interested in Steve Sarkisian, because what did he do as a head coach? We could coach Alabama's offense. I'd love to see Bill O'Brien go there and work for Nick Saban. But I'd just be very leery about anybody that's coached that offense because those guys are so good.
How's that hire going over down there?
Bill O'Brien?
No. How's
the Sarkisian in Texas?
People are happy to get rid of Tom Herman, but nobody's excited over Sark.
John, we're always excited to have you on the show. Thank you as always, and we will catch up with you later this week to preview Wildcard Weekend.
It's my pleasure, guys. Thank you very much. I'm excited about the Titans-Ravens playoff game. It's going to be the game of the weekend, some old-fashioned football. I'm looking forward to it. Can't wait to talk to you on Friday. Thank you.
Yep, thank you. First show there with John McClain of 2021 here on Midday 180. Right now, caller number 5 repeats the Coach Mac phrase of the day. You want a Coach Mac bobblehead courtesy of Farm Bureau Health Plan, 615-737-ZONE, 737-0663. Repeat the Macism of the day. Midday 180. Coming up, Paul, a great stat.
I mean, I don't think you guys are going to be as excited about it as I am.
The anticipation is killing
it. It's a topic that's near and dear to my heart that I've discussed quite a bit. And this statistic blows my mind.
You know my rule, Paul. If you tell me a show's not good, I'm not watching that show. And your tease is, I don't think you guys are going to like this stat.
But it blows my mind. It's important to me. And what's important to you, Hutton, is important to me.
You just told me it wasn't. Midday 180 delivered by Edley's Barbecue, 104.5 The Zone.
Me.
Midday 180 delivered by Edley's Barbecue. Paul, you requested this.
Look, we had a lot of conversation about this song, Joni Mitchell's River.
See, this interests me, this song.
So I did what we all do, right? I did my research. And so I found about like 6 stories about Joni Mitchell's River, and I put them in my Pocket app. And last night when I was not sleeping on my flight from Houston, I read all of them. Now, I will do an essay on the meaning of this song as a sad Christmas song next Christmas.
Okay.
But the statistic I unearthed...
Well, you're really calling your shot.
About next Christmas, this song.
Yeah.
I don't know if you guys will care, but I'll care next Christmas.
It's January 5th, and you're saying next Christmas.
I could do a poignant essay about December 1st next year on this song. But in the meantime, I want to tell you this. In my research, I've found that Yesterday by the Beatles has been covered 422 times. River by Joni Mitchell has been covered 761 times.
Wow.
Because everybody on their Christmas album is looking for an offsetting song that's sad about like missing out on Christmas, not making it home, or feeling like left out, all of these things. And they cover Joni Mitchell's River. This song has been covered 761 times. I could not believe when I read that number. That, to me, in a season of outrageous NFL statistics, is the most outrageous number I've come across.
This is the most outrageous tease that we've ever come across on this show. This is amazing.
What would you have set the over under at? Covers of Joni Mitchell's River.
That's a lot.
I'm surprised.
You would have gone under.
I've always heard, and I know these little trivial facts, but Yesterday is the most covered song of all time, is what I thought. So this surprised me. It must be like a non-holiday category.
Here's what I think.
And then a holiday category.
I thought the same thing. And the research I did. I think nowadays, you know, everybody can cover something and put it up somewhere, you know. And so it's probably a lot easier.
These aren't people with record deals, you're saying, the people put on YouTube.
Yeah, I think it's been covered on a lot of records, but I think it's also been a lot of albums.
You could cover it, and it would be 757 or whatever the number is.
I think David Reed, in fact, has put me singing over it up, and it kind of...
David Reed, can you play this on the recorder?
760 without me singing it on the Midday 180.
I call shenanigans on this. I'd never heard that song before you brought it up. And that doesn't hide the fact that that's a terrible Christmas song.
Yeah, I don't think of it as a Christmas song.
It's a different kind of Christmas.
She
doesn't think of it as a Christmas song.
Until you explained it to me that it was a Christmas song, I didn't know it was a Christmas song either. I knew the song.
I
never really thought of it as a Christmas song.
The fourth word of the song is Christmas. But she doesn't really think of it as a Christmas song either. Look, let's not be premature. Let's not be rash on getting me into my Christmas essay. I've got a long time to work on this. It's going to be a piece. I don't know if we'll use it in the long segment or the short segment, but I'm going to record this with Rhett or somebody. There's going to be music. James Taylor.
You're not recording it with Reed. I'll tell you that much.
I skipped right to Rhett. More friendly JT. Resource.
JT's a big fan of this
JT,
song.
I'm going to slip JT some, used to be some I could vodka. Slip him some food. Vodka, yeah.
He's still good with vodka.
He's still good with vodka.
I used to get slip him some food.
Oh, boy, I used to be able to slip some food.
Oh, Tim used to love some grub. Yeah,
get him some something vegan or vodka.
I got to give him some vegan jerky and some vodka.
So since we're on a musical note, quickly. So at my parents' Christmas, my daughter Evie, who is 5, received a saxophone for Christmas, like a little play saxophone.
Yeah.
I don't know if she asked for this or not, but she was very excited to get it. She will not stop playing the saxophone. Loves it. Her uncle PJ, my brother-in-law, was sitting there that night and teaching her. They have little songs you can play. And the colors you take.
Evie G is what I'm going to start calling her.
I was joking, call her Jenny G the whole time instead of Kenny G. Like, look at little Jenny G over here. I've got a video I'll show you guys where she snuck off on our Christmas celebration and went by herself. She was embarrassed. She said she was embarrassed to play for people. But
she wasn't ready
for it. She's got her back turned and she's on a stool and she's playing the saxophone by herself practicing.
Ricky in West End says, I refuse to be Hallelujah. Wasn't the most covered song ever.
Hallelujah is high on the list as well, behind Yesterday, though.
Or, I don't know, Jingle Bells.
That's also high on the list.
You know, songs we know are Christmas songs when you hear them. Santa Claus is coming to town.
That's also up there. I can share the story.
Frosty Lebowski, the Snowman.
Lebowski Listen. Wants to know, what am I supposed to do with myself waiting the next 360 days for Paul Kuharsky's Christmas essay?
I mean, you want a long-term what? Tease. I mean, a long-term tease.
Oh, but on that day, on the day before, Paul will say, you know what? Tomorrow, it may not mean much to you, but it's going to mean a lot to me.
Listen, this is the biggest example of what Chad Withrow brought us on the Let's Not Be Rash. I don't want to rush in there.
Not the best example.
Paul said he doesn't like extremes.
There's a website from VLove. VLove says there's another website that reports that the song has only been covered 35 times.
It's called Who Sampled, and it's exploring the DNA of music. Discover music through samples, cover songs, and remixes. This is the Twitter account and website.
That's still 35 times too much, but that sounds more reasonable to me.
Reed believes it's the first time.
Year-long
the fact that it's able to be covered was too much.
I have a problem in our house. As soon as the Christmas decorations come down, Lindsay puts up Easter. So we move from birth to resurrection.
Yeah.
Paul,
that's 33 years.
That's one extreme. Paul's extreme year-long tease for this thing is on the other end.
I mean, you talk about
being
rash. Do you go
back to birth after that in April?
No, we go
right back to Christmas.
Right back to the manger.
Right back to Thanksgiving.
I mean, you guys fast forward through 33 years. It's unbelievable. This kid doesn't even get to puberty.
Guys, fun show today. Tomorrow.
Too good.
Greg Cosell.
Too good.
It's too good.
Doug
Matthews.
Too good.
We should have toned it.
Primary complaint.
You know what? We're leaving.
We'll be back at 6, the 186, right here on 104.5 The Zone. Midday 180, delivered by Edley's Barbecue on 104.5 The Zone.
We love you, people. Don't block the box. Do lock the locks. And look forward to that River retrospective in 360 days.